Blog Talk Radio.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you so much for waking up this morning and listening to the show. This month is Alcohol Awareness Month. Mainly what that means is this is a month to make people aware of alcohol addiction that may be happening to themselves and or how to give help to others who are affected by their addiction, maybe their children or their wife, their coworkers, their friends. So that's why I'm doing this show this month. You know me, I do a lot of health shows. I try to do a lot of awareness shows, but I want people to have the help. You can't say you didn't know where or when I could get help. If you come to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes, this is a place where I want you to know you have some resources available. I have some special guests this morning. I believe Dr. Peter Hayden is on the phone right now. Let's see. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Hayden. We're on the air right now. Thank you for joining the call.
Thanks for having me.
And also I have a guest that was sent to me by Al-Anon. Her name is Bea. And we're keeping her real name anonymous just for safety purposes. Thank you so much, Bea, for joining us.
Glad to be here.
For those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Peter Hayden, he's an internationally recognized speaker, trainer, consultant, and founder of a chemical and mental health HIV/AIDS agency. He has consulted on numerous books and articles regarding chemical dependency treatment and effects, co-occurring disorders and mental health, end-stage renal disease, and teenage suicide. Thank you so much, Dr. Hayden, again, for joining the call this morning.
Yeah, I'm just glad to be here. I'm in Minneapolis, and it's no snow, and it looks like it's going to be 70 degrees, so I'm feeling good.
Oh, that's awesome, 70 degrees. Well, we got a little cold freeze here in Philadelphia. We were almost up to 90-something, and now we're down to 50s, so you got us beat. But this is a really important issue. I guess one of the key issues that people always, I guess, hit upon are I'm not addicted to anything. I take a drink every once in a while, or I don't have an addiction. Dr. Hayden, explain to us, what is the definition of addiction?
Well, basically it's doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. Not able to say no without significant external sources of influence, such as your parents, judges. In other words, you find yourself doing the same thing, knowing, at first you may not know, but at some point in time, knowing that it's detrimental to your health, and that's basically addiction in a short way.
Well, what if people say to you, well, I only drink wine every once in a while. What's the difference between, say, wine, beer, and, you know, Jack Daniels? Is there any difference in what the person is drinking?
Well, it isn't, because we're talking about addiction and not the use. So, therefore, if you just drink wine every day, or you just have a sip or whatever the case is, the point is what does it do to you? How does it affect your behavior? How does it affect others around you? So the issue isn't, because there are some people who have one drink a day, and you really don't want to be around them. Their behavior is that bad. Then there are some other people that have 5 or 6 drinks, and the behavior is not the same. However, at some point in time, you start to see the change. So it's not about how much or what you drink. It's what your behavior is when you use the alcohol.
Mm. Now, explain the issue of binge drinking, because there's some people, well, I only go out, you know, twice a month. But when they go out, they're drinking 8, 10, you know, glasses of wine or beer or, you know, shots or whatever. Talk to us about the issue of binge drinking.
Well, it's more about when you drink, not how much you drink. Matter of fact, I have a colleague, and she was talking to me about her father. He only drinks a certain time of year. Otherwise, he doesn't drink. But when he does, everyone feels like he might as well drink every day, because at that particular time, the youth. So in his mind, I only drink once a year. And, yeah, I drink a little more, but it's only once a year.
Mm-hmm. But like you said, it's how it's affecting his life and the people around him.
Exactly. And that's the major part. How does our actions with regards to drinking affect me and those people around me?
Well, Bea, I think she can speak to that. Bea, you want to tell us your story and your with your family or friend that was affected by this addiction?
Sure. First of all, I want to say that, of course, B is a pseudonym, and I'm using it not because of safety purposes, but because of the anonymity of the Al-Anon Family Group Program. We want anyone that's seeking help to realize that their personal anonymity is protected. So at the level of press, radio, TV, and films, we guard with special care the anonymity of alcoholics and ourselves. Now, with me as an African-American woman that came up in pretty much a middle-class background, it was hard for me to readily identify that alcoholism was the cause of the problems that were making me feel so less than. And what I mean by that is I came from a family raised in the church. I had ministers in my family. I was told that all you need to do is be a good wife and mother, okay, and take your children to church and all of this. Well, I was doing all the things that I was taught to do, but there was something happening in my family, and everyone was looking to me, the wife, the mother,
to solve the matter.
What's going on? To solve it, yes, because as a person, as African-American women typically, and this is to anyone across culture lines, we're looked upon as the nucleus of that family. And so for me, I couldn't make it right. It wasn't about the sex we had. It wasn't about me cleaning the house, keeping the children neat and clean and well-behaved. It wasn't about me cooking dinner, and I was doing all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I could not control, at that time, my husband's drinking.
Let me bring Dr. Hayden in here for a second. Dr. Hayden, do you hear this story, this comment of women trying to feel that they are the ones responsible, trying to fix the problem, and the problem, maybe sometimes people not even want to say what the problem is, but we know we have a problem?
Oh, yeah, over and over and over again. And the other thing, I would just like to say, is that we're almost expecting you to take care of the problem. And in that brings even more pressure. So what happens is that once B doesn't...
Sorry, I think we lost you a little bit.
Once that situation isn't taken care of, then sometimes the blame is shifted to B, than the person who has the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that, B, happened to you, that people were blaming you?
Oh, of course, of course. You know, if you were cleaning the house, if you were cooking, what are you doing to make him do this? And then all of the things, as I said earlier, all of the things that I had been taught was that the woman, it's her responsibility. Now, let me just say, in Al-Anon, there are men and women. So, and I'm not going to, I can't relate to men's experience. I can only give you my own experience, strength, and hope. But all of the things that I had said as a child and teenager growing up that I wouldn't put up with in relationships, I found myself doing. And I knew that I was being the best mother, the best wife that I could possibly be, and still it wasn't keeping this man at home. He was out carousing and drinking and all of the behaviors that are associated with alcoholism. Now,
Dr. Hayden,
he didn't ever have to admit, I'm sorry.
No,
go
that's
ahead.
Okay. I just want to bring Dr. Hayden, you brought the issue of the difference between men and women. Who was, in your studies, who do you find more susceptible to alcohol addiction, men or women, or is there a difference?
Well, it really isn't. What we found is that we've always known about the man. The man's been able to be out there and visible. But if we're, as time has passed, we're finding that women are just as susceptible as men are. And the other piece that we found was that we tended to allow, and this is a negative of what I'm going to say, is but when women use drugs in the same way of men, one, they were put down, and two, because they were mothers, they were looked at, well, let's let this slide a little more because she's a mother, she's got to take care of the home, she has to do this, that, and the other. And so the way we treated women who are addicted was different than how we treated men.
So
my point is that it is not a difference when it comes to addiction between men and women. It's the way we have treated women and the difference that we treated men.
Now, do you think that in terms of society and also the clinical professionals treated women differently, or just society, you think, treated women differently?
I think professionals treated women different. Certainly there's reports where women were able to get medication different than when men had, because the whole, I mean, even when in appearing in court. Now today, it's a different subject. We have to look at why are women going to jail for addiction when they should be going to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
When crack cocaine came out, and I know we're going a little different than the alcohol, but when it came out, we talked about putting women in jail. You know,
there's higher rates of
children.
Right. Well,
and
you know,
so,
in terms of crack and cocaine, people are put in jail longer for crack than they are cocaine, but it's the same substance.
Exactly. And so when we talk about alcohol, we're talking about a gateway. There's more people use alcohol today than any other drug. And we tend sometimes to miss that. And then we also look at how we treat men and women with regards to being an alcoholic. And
mm-hmm.
so what happens if you are a mother, and B, you can attest to this, if you're a woman and you have an alcohol problem and you're in an alcohol family with your husband or whatever the case may be, you tend to get the short end because you still, the mother is at the top, and so therefore we don't want to allow you to have treatment in the same manner as your husband, your partner, or whatever the case may be.
B, now how did you come to Al-Anon? How did you come to Al-Anon to start getting some help for this situation?
Okay. Very first, I want to say that my life has been affected by someone else's drinking. I'm not an alcoholic, okay? Now, what happened to me is that I realized that my children were being harmed. And for a mother and someone who took pride in being a mother, that was an eye-opener for me. I reached what we often call a bottom, when you feel as if everything, you just give up and you look for help. And through a coworker, I found out about Al-Anon family groups. I made the call, and in every major city in the United States, there is an Al-Anon contact number, and even in small communities. Now, for me, as I said, with my background, I couldn't look to the church. I really couldn't look to my family. I couldn't look to my friends. I had to go outside of that circle to get help from myself and my children. Now,
mm-hmm.
people say, well, it doesn't matter about children. It does matter. They're listening. They're watching. They're being affected, too, by all the chaos in your home.
Well, that's the same
and
thing
it was
people
my
say
youngest
about domestic
child.
Violence. The same thing people say
right.
about domestic violence, that, the child wasn't being hit. I was being hit. He wasn't hurting the child, or she wasn't hurting the child. But the child absorbs and sees what's going on with the parent. Children are very in tune, and Dr. Hayden, I'm sure you can repeat this issue, that children are affected even if they're not physically hit directly or nobody's pouring the drink or shooting up their veins with heroin. Dr. Hayden, can
well,
you
they're emotional. Okay. Well, let me just
go right ahead, B, and then I'll come in.
Yeah.
Okay. Children are affected emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually just as the significant other is. And it was my youngest son that said to me after watching and participating in a DARE project at school, "Mom, Dad is abusive, and we need to get to Alateen." At 9 years old.
Nine.
So that's what led, that's what helped me to say, I need to get help. If I get into help, this will impact my children's lives.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you got some help. Dr. Hayden, you wanted to say something?
And what we're just, what B is talking about and we're talking about is the environment in which people are grown up in. Insanity is
yes.
what? When insanity basically is... is something I see that you don't see. That, I mean, that's a, and you continue to do this thing. And what happens in the environment or the family, it is you're seeing insanity happen in the environment in which you're in, but there's no escape because it's a built-in situation. We talk a lot about being a child of an alcoholic, and and this is how it basically goes. You come home and you're 2 minutes late from school. Your dad gives you a spanking or he blesses you out or whatever the case may be. You say, fine, I'm going to come home tomorrow 5 minutes early. Guess what happens? The same thing. The satisfaction from your dad or your mom isn't there. So you say, okay, I'm going to come home right on time. The same thing happens. That's the insanity, and that is what goes on with regards to the alcoholism with regards into a family. And what happens is that you start to perpetrate that because you cannot take psychologically every day you come home and you don't know what to expect.
What's going to happen.
And so it becomes drama in your life.
Well, according to the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, some of the effects of children of alcoholics, a child in such a family may have guilt, anxiety, embarrassment, inability to have close relationships, confusion. Of course you're going to be confused. It's like you said, every day you're coming home, you don't know what's right or wrong because nothing you do is satisfying your parent. Also anger and depression. Let me ask you, Dr. Hayden, is this a gateway to other drugs? Someone starting to be an alcoholic, is this a gateway for them to start using marijuana or crack cocaine or heroin? What do you find in your therapy? Is that something that happens a lot?
Very much so, because, you know, there's a lot of talk about marijuana being a gateway drug, but no, it's alcohol. As long as you can stumble into a liquor store and you're of age and you can show your identification, more than likely you're going to get that drug. Now, here's what the big issue is. We're talking a lot about the person who is addicted, but as B said, what happens is other people start to use alcohol because they're trying to deal with the stress that you just talked about and those kinds of things. So if you can't beat it, you join it.
Right.
Exactly.
What if you have a friend? There's a question from the chat room is asking me, what if you have a relative who's dealing with their parent is an alcoholic? How do you approach them? Look, you got a problem. It's affecting the kids. How do you, as the outsider, come in and approach the person in their family who has the issue?
Well, there's two ways. We have the 12 steps of AA. We have a piece. The 12th step is where you come together as a group, as a family, as people who love that person, and we sit down and we talk about, because they can't see their behavior, and so we help them look at their behavior, and we also help them understand that we love you too much to allow you to continue to act the way you do. Now, from B's side, and B, you can say more about this, from B's side, that's where Al-Anon comes in, because whoever the person is who is not addicted but is in this type of relationship or environment, that's where you don't have to take that person to AA or, say, get treatment. You can then go and start getting help for yourself, because the major thing to me with Al-Anon is trying to make sure wherever the sanity is in that relationship that they start to get fixed. If you have a car and you have one tire is a bad tire, you know, in other words, it's almost flat and things of this nature. And then you have a brand new tire on the other side. If you don't get the other, if you don't get the flat tire fixed, guess what happens to the other tires?
Mm-hmm. They wear
you
down.
Follow me?
And yes,
so,
they wear down.
You might want to talk a little bit about the Al-Anon process with regards to trying to heal yourself.
Sure, I'm very happy to. I've been in Al-Anon quite a number, as we say, 24 hours or one day at a time. Mm. And as I said, one of the things that got me there was my youngest child saying that we needed to help as a family. And, of course, when I came into Al-Anon, I found out that, guess what, I'm an adult child. My father, I had just suppressed this information about my own family because I was too focused on him and what he was doing. And what we suggest that when you come into Al-Anon that you attend at least 6 meetings before you decide if Al-Anon is for you or not. It is a 12-step program. It is there to help you focus on you, not on that person. We
mm-hmm.
have to deal with, number one, what has drawn us to that person. They could be very loving, but what makes us continue to stay in an abusive relationship, whether it's emotional abuse, mental abuse, verbal, whatever kind of abuse it is. But we find out that we are doing the same things over and over, insanity, expecting a different result. Maybe if I lose 10 pounds, maybe if I dye my hair, maybe if I rearrange the furniture. And we ourselves are becoming neurotic and not dependable. Our children can't depend on us. They don't know what that non-drinking parent is going to do.
Mm-hmm. Let me give
and
the phone
at work,
for,
you may
Al-Anon.
Not be the person.
Let me just give the, there's a helpline. If you're listening to the show today, the National Drug and Alcohol Treatment Referral Service is 1-800-662-HELP. Again, that's 1-800-662-HELP. And for the Al-Anon family groups, their website is al-anonfamilygroups.com. I have it in the chat room. And their 1-800 number is 1-888-4, that's the number 4, Al-Anon. Again, 1-888-4, Al-Anon. So please, if you're listening to the show today or you know someone who's dealing with this issue, please share those links and information. I will be posting them on my website. The Al-Anon link is already there for today's show. Dr. Hayden, how long do you think it takes for someone to deal with an addiction? Is this a lifelong issue? Can they be cured, so to speak?
Yeah, it's a lifelong addiction, and because and it's an illness. And so I'm so glad that B said her recovery is 24 hours a day. And it's the same thing with regards to people who are fall into this category of being an alcoholic. It's 24-hour a day, and that's why you have to have support, and that's why everybody around you has to live 24 hours a day differently than what it was like when you were using. At my center, we know, now this is a fact, we know for the first 7 years, if you can stay sober 7 years, you tend to stay sober for the rest of your life.
Wow.
And
so it takes 7 years. 7 years. So one year,
exactly.
Somebody comes to you and says, baby, I stopped drinking. I'm clean. I'm not doing anymore, and it's only been a year. Are you telling the other person not to let them in, or what would you say to somebody that's
no,
coming
no,
back?
No, no, no. No, what I'm saying is that you cannot ever come and say, I am clean in a way that I can go out and live my life the way it was before.
Mm.
It just doesn't happen because you have to work, and there's so many different levels of recovery that you have to work on them on a continuous basis. And so the track that we have to understand is that there is not – the only way you get in the Hall of Fame of dependency is by staying sober for the rest of your life.
Mm.
You can't do it by looking up one day and say, I have 30 years of sobriety. You have to, on a daily basis, complete the 24 hours, and that 24 hours you are a better person when you look back on it than you were the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, you cannot ever, your behavior has to change, your environment has to change, sometimes your friendship has to change.
So it's a constant struggle, like you said, and like B said, it's 24 hours for her also, and she's not the one with the addiction, but she realized how it was affecting your life. Now, again, let me just state these phone numbers for people. Dr. Hayden, just in closing, we have about 2 minutes left. What would you say to someone who's listening to the show today who has an addiction, but they don't think they have an addiction? How can you get through to them today?
Here's the beautiful part. When you don't think you have an addiction, you have an addiction. I want to just thank the Al-Anon group because they play such a great part with regards to helping the system of recovery succeed. But here's just a quick story. The thing is that, and this is more not to the person trying to who is an alcoholic, it's the person around them. If you see a behavior that you know is detrimental not only to you, I mean not to the person, but to the environment in which you live, you need to take steps to do something because it's about love. And that's what Al-Anon has done. Al-Anon said it's not just the addicted person in this, it is all those people around them. And so therefore, if we can't work on he or she who is chemical dependent or alcoholic, we can certainly work with the person who loves them.
I want to thank both of you so much. We only have about a minute left. Dr. Hayden, thank you so much for your knowledge and your encouragement. Thank you, Bea, for sharing your story. And thank you to the listeners this morning for listening to the show. You can also follow me on twitter.com/joykeys, or you can become a fan on Facebook of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And next week, we're going to be talking about how to get into the fair trade business with the Fair Trade Resource Network and the Fair Trade Federation. And the second half of the show, which is 11:30 to 12, I'll be talking to author Carlene Bryce. So please tune in next Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern. The call-in number is 646-929-0368. Everyone have a wonderful Saturday. Dr. Hayden, B, again, thank you so much for joining the call today.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
I know.
Again, you guys can follow me on twitter.com/joykeys or become a fan on Facebook. Everyone have a wonderful Saturday, and tune in next Saturday. Thank you.
Thank you.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks.